Always good to catch up with Luke Clanton. Luke, appreciate the time as always. Let's start last year. What are some of the memories for you of the entire week for an event which truly changed the whole landscape and future of your golfing career?
Yeah, obviously it was pretty cool to get it done in the hometown and, you know, somewhere that I kind of grew up playing and all my friends and family were here. It was really cool. I mean, even playing the back nine today, kind of saw, you know, the 18th putt again and hit it a few times just to get that memory back. But, you know, again, I have, you know, really big goals and aspirations of what I want to do in my career. And, you know, I think that starting point was really awesome.
Luke, having gone through it, is there a psychological shift from getting a sponsor exemption as an amateur to now having to do it for a job, trying to earn points, trying to earn money, trying to earn status?
I mean, you know, everyone can say it's different. Everyone can say it's the same. But I feel like to me, it's just we're going out to play golf again. You know, I think I tried to make it different, which it really isn't. You know, obviously it's a job and obviously we're trying to keep our jobs and play the best we can. But at the end of the day, we're going out to play golf, you know, and I think that's kind of what I'm learning from most of these guys on tour, you know, the bigger names. And obviously they just kind of go out with this calm mindset knowing that they can do it. So I think that's something I'm trying to adapt.
What has surprised you the most out on the PGA Tour? As you said, it's now your job. This is what you do week in and week out as you're trying to get your feet underneath you. What's been the biggest surprise?
I think the travel, you know, it's you got to eat pretty good. If you don't eat great, that 5-week travel is going to be a bit tough on you. But no, I think it's just been awesome. You know, it's something that you dream for. And I think, you know, the travel was a little bit difficult for the first bit. I was a little bit unprepared for that, but I think obviously with a little bit of time now and trying to get the weight up and body's a little bit stronger, so I think it's good. I'm ready for it.
Speaking of getting the weight up, Luke, I read a piece that you gained about 15 pounds in the off season. How did you do it and why did you do it?
Well, it was a lot of food. I'll just start off with that. There's a lot of Mountain Mel L houses and all that, just chicken and fry, but no, it was good. It was something that I've been wanting to do for a while, and I got up to 182 pounds, and I felt a little bit overweight, if that makes sense. But I dropped a few pounds since then, and now I'm at a pretty good weight for me. And yeah, I started taking creatine as well, which was nice. And I think it's just something that I've always kind of wanted to work on. I think I've been, you know, cruising at like 162, 165, and I knew that's not really a stable weight. So I think if I got a little bit heavier, it would have been nice.
When you look at 2026, an indifferent start for you on this PGA Tour season, how have you dealt with the early ups and downs?
Yeah, I mean, it's failure is weird. I think, you know, a lot of people can look at things and say that's a bad week or whatever it is. But, you know, if I'm learning every week, I think it's a good week. And, you know, it's such a media trained answer to say, obviously, but, you know, it's something that I'm trying to work on, adapt. And, you know, obviously we kind of battled with a little bit of sickness through early in the week, and, you know, it was a little bit tough, but I'm not going to blame it on that. I think it was me mentally. I had, you know, a lot of pressure on myself to play well, and I think over the last couple of weeks I've kind of adapted and just understand that I'm going to go out and play the best I can. You know, whatever happens, happens. I have, you know, a great family, great friends, and everyone that's supporting me and what I do, and no matter how I play on the golf course. So I think that's something that I've been working on, and it's good.
Luke, just 22 years old, you're one of the youngest players on the PGA Tour. What's that like from a social aspect?
Yeah, it's a little crazy. You know, walking into a Publix and maybe someone asking for a photo is definitely new, but it's been awesome. I mean, you know, I think I wouldn't take it back for anything I'm doing. I love kind of spreading that generation, the younger generation, with all the, you know, goals and aspirations of what I'm trying to do and, you know, the way I grew up. And I think it's something that, you know, I'm so excited to kind of do. I think, you know, my dad kind of talked to me about it. He's like, if you ever see, you know, any young kids or anything asking for an autograph or a ball or whatever it is, you give it to them because you never know what that can do. And, you know, I'm 22 years old, so I'm not really thinking that way, but my dad kind of been enforcing that on me. So it's been really cool.
You're a Florida guy. You have a lot of experience at PGA National. What are you most looking forward to in the coming weeks as the Florida swing is front and center?
Yeah, obviously, I think I get to be able to sleep in my my bed tonight, which is great. I just moved up here about 8 months ago, so it's been nice to go back and sleep and in my own bed. But, you know, again, I think it's kind of the same week in, week out. You're just going to go out and do your prep, and obviously I have a little bit more experience here, which is nice, and know the golf course a little bit better. But, you know, again, I'm not going to kind of apply that pressure to go out and play well. I'm just going to do what I normally do. And the prep's been amazing, so I'm excited.
Luke, just poring over the stats from 2025, it looked like your short game and your putting were sort of areas of improvement. Is that, are you chalking that up to sort of course unfamiliarity, or is that something that you're genuinely working on with your coach to try and improve for this year?
Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm not going to blame it on the course. no, it's been a little bit streaky here and there, but again, I think it's something that I'm learning. You know, it's definitely different than amateur golf, you know, in college golf courses and that. It's a little bit harder, and, you know, being around the best short game guys in the world, it's watching them chip and watching them do what they do is really awesome. So, you know, again, I've been training really intense on, you know, my short game, my putting, my chipping, the bunker shots, whatever it is, and it's been good. But I know if my ball striking is there, I won't have to do that much, which is nice. So it's just kind of a mix of both.
You talked off the top about goals, things you want to achieve throughout your career. I want to finish this interview with, what are your goals for 2026? What do you hope to have done when you look back at it 8-9 months from now?
Well, I'm going to give you my actual goals, and one of them is to get close with Christ, close to my mom and dad, and then obviously enjoy what I do and love it. I think, you know, everyone, obviously I know I want to say I want to win a major and win multiple PGA Tour events. Obviously I want to do that. But again, I think it comes with time, and I think it comes with experience. And as I'm doing right now, as a 23-year-old, I think it's pretty cool what I have right now. And as I keep going, I'm going to keep understanding and learning.
Wonderful balance, great perspective for the 22-year-old Luke Clanton. Appreciate the time. Always good to catch up. All the best this week and moving forward.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you all.
Luke Clanton got to the PGA Tour through the PGA Tour U rankings as we take a look at the latest rankings, providing playing opportunities to the best from the college game. And a reminder, that top spot is valuable. Right now it belongs to the Virginia senior, Ben James. He holds on to that spot. He'll head to the PGA Tour after the NCAA championships. Stay tuned for more golf today. Coming up, we'll be joined by our good friend and colleague, Jimmy Roberts, who's being recognized in South Florida this week with a very special honor. What does it mean to Jimmy to earn the Tim Rosefort Distinguished Journalist Award? We'll find out as we catch up with Jimmy Roberts next, right here on Golf Today. The PGA Tour's Florida swing begins this week at PGA National as the tour's best will tee it up in the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches, and a fixture for so many years outside the ropes there at PGA National was Tim Rosefort, who covered the Cognizant Classic for more than three decades as part of a historic career in golf journalism, first at the Sun Sentinel and Palm Beach Post, then as a writer for Sports Illustrated and Golf World, and finally as an insider for NBC and Golf Channel.
Rosie left such an impact on the local PGA Tour stuff that in 2021, tournament officials decided to rename the Media Center at PGA National in honor of him. Tournament director Ken Kennerly also established the Tim Rosefort Distinguished Journalist Award that same year. Tim Rosefort was the inaugural recipient before he sadly passed away in 2022 from complications due to Alzheimer's. This year's recipient of the award is longtime NBC golf host and reporter Jimmy Roberts, whose career began as a production assistant for ABC during the 1980 Olympics. After 8 years, he moved in front of the camera with ESPN, covering the World Series, NBA Finals, and Super Bowl, before joining NBC covering golf in 2000. And it's great to be joined by Jimmy Roberts now. Jimmy, congratulations, my friend. You've won a lot of awards during your distinguished career. What's the significance of this one to you?
Well, thanks, Lav. I got to say, the best part about this is that it gives us an opportunity to recognize a really special, special guy who had an impact on a lot of people's lives and really went about his business in a way that we should all admire and aspire to. Tim was one of the hardest working people that I ever knew in the business. But more than that, he was also one of the kindest people that I ever knew. And I don't think we can get enough kindness in our lives these days.
Jimmy, that's the significance from your perspective. But for you personally, what was the reaction when you first learned of the news?
I was shocked. Timmy and I go back a long, long way. When I first started covering golf when I was at ESPN, I won't say that the golf writing and journalism community was a closed shop. It was certainly much more open than some other facets of journalism. But it was intimidating. There were giants of the game. You got to remember that back then, every big newspaper had a guy on the beat, whether it was, you know, Tommy Bonk for the LA Times or Jeff Rude for the Chicago newspapers or Larry Dorman for the New York Times. And these were intimidating presences who I was used to reading every day. And at the top of the list was Tim Rosefort. And there were times when I just really wasn't sure of my footing. And he was one of the most welcoming people you could ever know. And that was so reassuring because he was a guy who helped me out and helped me feel like I belonged. And I feel comfortable in saying that, you know, a decade or so later, when he branched out to doing something different, I was able to provide the same advice and comfort for him. And so it's just so meaningful to be connected to him. He was just such a great guy, and he worked so hard, and, you know, people really liked him, and that has true meaning as far as I'm concerned.
Jimmy, you and I both had an opportunity to work really closely with Rosie. What were some of the things that you learned from each other?
Well, one of the things that I still can't figure out is which phone number to call with Rosie. Anybody who knew Rosie knew that if you needed him, you had to scroll through this list, which included, like, I don't know, a handful of numbers, and you never knew which ones were the most recent ones, and he was always walking around with a couple of cell phones. But I don't know that there was anything specifically. He was just a great sounding board for me. You know, he was a respected presence, and so if I had a question about something that I was doing, I always felt really comfortable going to him, sharing with him, getting his opinion on how this all played out and whether it made sense and whether I had all the bases covered. And I always felt that if Tim gave it the nod, then I could feel comfortable because, you know, he was somebody really, as I said, to respect. And when, you know, when the shoe was on the other foot, you know, television looks easy, but there are certainly enough, I don't know, hidden potholes to step into. And it meant a lot to me that he came to me. I don't know why he came to me, but he came to me, and I was able to provide the same advice and counsel to him. We worked together on a number of events, on Ryder Cups and U.S. Opens and big events where we would do these segments together. And it was a lot of fun. It's a really, really fond memory. I just keep getting back to it. He was just good people.
He certainly was. And to earn this honor, Jimmy, it really shows the respect of many for all the years you have covered the game so well. What are some of the memorable stories through all the years of covering this great game resonate with you, you still look back at fondly?
Come on, Burko, that's a question you had to give me some advance warning on. let's see. But you're a good journalist, so that's not what we do. You know, when I think back on all the golf stories that I've been fortunate enough to come across, I really think the one that stands out the most for me is the work that we did on the story involving Valentino Dixon, who was a guy who was serving, I don't even know how long the original term was supposed to be, in Attica prison for murder. And as a result of some of the work that we did along with the people from Golf Digest, they initially had the story, but we worked on that story and we had a hand in helping to get his conviction overturned and expunged. And Valentino's become a good friend over the years, and I can't even imagine something more consequential in the work that we all do when you can impact somebody's life like that. So if I had to choose one, I would say it's being involved with the Valentino Dixon story. To this day, I'm so very proud of that.
Jimmy, when you zoom out, how do you see the media landscape evolving?
Oh, boy. You know, buckle your seatbelt, Lav. I mean, when I first got involved in doing this, as I just mentioned, I was reading newspapers, and they were actually papers, not websites. There was no such thing
as my major,
a website.
Yes, newspapers.
And, you know, there you go. But, you know, and at the risk of sounding too old, I mean, it's just accelerating at warp speed. And I think it's a good thing. I just think we need to be careful. I think that the most important thing is oversight. because I think that when you say something, there's no unringing the bell in this kind of current culture. So we just need to take care that what we say is properly thought of. And, you know, because it can do a lot of harm, it can do a lot of good. And I think ultimately the mission is the same. We represent people who are sitting in their living rooms, in their kitchens, looking at their phones. They're on the other side of this communication. We represent them, and we're there to ask the questions for them and tell the stories to them, because they can't be here, and we think that they'd like to know. But I just would say, ultimately, I think the most important thing hasn't changed over time. It's handle with care.
As we circle back and finish up talking golf, a big stretch on the PGA Tour coming up, and you've been such an enormous fixture, especially during this part of the season. How would you best describe this run-up to the Players, the Masters, and beyond?
It's exciting. I mean, you know, this event, I can't tell you how many times I've stood in this very spot, you know, with that lake in back of me and those fountains, you know, no matter who the sponsor was over the years, there's an excitement. You know, you can see Augusta over the horizon and then the U.S. Open and, you know, everything else that lays beyond. This is where it starts. And even the generation before I started doing this, the tour used to come east and start at Doral. And now, of course, we're back at Doral. But this is where it starts. It's the run-up to the major season, and I just think it's really, really exciting. And I tell you what, it's just great to be here, because in my front yard, there's now 2 feet of snow on the ground, so I'm not going to complain about anything.
We can verify that is the case here in the Northeast. Enjoy the warm South Florida weather. More importantly, congratulations once again, my friend. Well deserved.
Pleased to be joined now by Tom DeAngelo, the senior columnist for the Palm Beach Post. And Tom, it's great to see you. We've got Orlando on the Florida swing. We've got Tampa on the Florida swing. We have Miami now back in the schedule later on the PGA Tour schedule. In your opinion, what's the importance of having a Palm Beach area event on the PGA Tour schedule?
Well, that's a very big question in these parts because of what's going on with the possibility of the changing schedule. But look, you mentioned all those areas, and none of them, and Jacksonville's comes close, but very few of them have the golf pedigree that Palm Beach County has. This is, Jordan Spieth last year called it the professional men's golf mecca of the United States, and it really is. We have, it seems like half the tour, but there's well over 50 professionals living within 10 miles of where I'm standing right now. The golf courses, they moved down here for a reason. The crowds that came to this, and the way this social event, this event was 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when Tiger and Rory were here and Phil, and it was nothing like it. It was easily the biggest social event and sporting event in this county every year. That's changed, and it'd be a shame if that goes even further, but I think it's very important to have an event in Palm Beach County.
Tom, to that point, we have all covered this particular event so many times through the years, and you just talked about the social aspect. How would you describe the vibe so far this week and maybe the last 2 or 3 years and how it's possibly changed?
Well, it's diminished. There's no question. This was the place to be, you know, for so many years. The biggest thing, obviously, is the field. Fewer elite golfers. Fewer people come out to the event. As much as they try to make this a social event, as much as they try to, you know, they try to sell, and they do a great job of those other aspects of putting on a golf tournament, it's hard when you have 13 of the top 30 golfers in the world living right here, and only one is showing up here this week. And the community starts to wonder, you know, why and who am I coming out to see? Now, look, these are great golfers. I love coming out and seeing these guys. It's my job, and even if it wasn't, I like golf. But the casual sports fan and even some of the golf sports fans, they are pausing a little bit when they're coming out to see a field that it took another big blow Monday, you know, when you lose your top two ranked players. So it has diminished. Certainly the luster has been lost, both, not as we know, both in the field and certainly from the crowd standpoint.
So, Tom, we know why the top players are skipping it. There's three signature events in the Players' Championship in a five-week span.
Yep.
The question is, what can be done about it? How can it be fixed, in your opinion?
This is all on the PGA Tour, guys. I think that they are the only people that can save this event. It has to be moved, or things have to be moved around it. I think probably it is going to be moved more than juggling everything around it, although we will see a lot of significant changes around it too. But there are only certain fixed times you can have an event in South Florida. You're not going to move it in May into the summer. They have to carve out a spot somewhere, even if it's mid-February on to maybe 2 weeks after the Masters. That's probably your window to have an event here. They have to carve out a spot there where there are not all these high-profile signature events, players around it. There are two tournaments that are in very, very difficult positions. This is one of them. When you're in the middle of four high-profile events and you're asking guys to play five events in a row, those who are in signature events, it's hard for them to do that. That's why I give someone like Shane Lowry great credit. He is playing five in a row. But there is. I don't think there's any other answer. The only answer is to move this and take away those $20 million purses that are two ahead of it and two behind it.
That's the state of this event in 2026. Let's look at the bigger picture, some of the great moments that have happened right there in South Florida. What are one or two of your fondest memories of this particular tournament?
Well, I think without doubt, this tournament took off, and its heyday started in 2012. It came to this is the 20th anniversary of being in PGA National. For 4 years, we came to Palm Beach County. The first 4 years, it was across the street at the country club at Marisol. But in 2012, you had that Tiger chasing down Rory, a 22-year-old Rory McIlroy held him off. Tiger shot, I believe it was 64, which I still believe is his lowest final round in his career. Rory won that tournament, and it was the first time he went to number one in the world. The crowds were out of their minds here, and especially, you know, Rory wasn't as big, obviously, then, but Tiger was Tiger. And then it took off. 2 years later, in 2014, there were seven of the top 10 golfers in the world were played here. To make that comparison to now, since 2020, the last 7 years, there have been three total top 10 golfers in this field. So you had seven in 2014. Those years from 2012 to 2018, this was as good an event. You take it, you know, after the majors, after the players, this was an event. This was a destination for these golfers. It was a place to come, and the crowds knew it. And those moments were huge here. The place was absolutely electric.
Ergo, you and I covered those early 2010s Honda Classics, and they absolutely were a scene. Tom, you do not have a top 25 player in the field, but you do have Brooks Koepka. You have Ryan Gerard, who's the betting favorite. Give me your biggest storyline of the week this week at PGA National.
Well, yeah, it's obviously Brooks, and that's an easy one to say, and it's kind of cliche right now, but you can't ignore it. He hasn't played here since 2022. Brooks is not one of those guys who didn't play it. He grew up here. He's really the only one on tour. He is the only one on tour that actually was born here. A lot of them have moved here for all kinds of reasons, but Brooks is a native. Brooks has taken care of his hometown event. First started playing here in 2014. He got a sponsor's exemption that year, made the cut, and it was just the third cut he ever made in a PGA Tour event. And obviously he played here a whole bunch before that as juniors and as a kid. I think him alone, this is a very, very important get for them when Brooks announced he was coming back and then he was playing here. That alone is going to help this field, I really believe. I think out of all the years, you know, when you come in here year after year after year, you kind of get used to someone being here. But someone who went through what Brooks has gone through, not played here for 3 years, coming off LIV, a very controversial decision to leave the tour, go to LIV, and now come back, I believe he'll be appreciated a lot more. I believe it's going to be nothing but love for him on the course. And they will come out. He will have a lot of family. He will have a lot of friends. I think more so than ever. That's maybe the first one. I wasn't here the first one he played, but he wasn't Brooks Koepka then like we know him now. I think more so than ever, you will see crowds that are have been as big as we've seen the last, say, 8 to 10 years following Brooks.
Well, they say things come in threes. This is Brooks' third PGA Tour event back since returning from LIV Golf.
Yeah.
What a week it could be for Koepka there in South Florida. Tom, always appreciate the time to catch up. Enjoy the week.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.